So I'm glad to know I'm not the only one whose eyes are going. Nobody look at my password as I am typing it. That's the first slide. First results from the UNIS sounding rocket campaign. There's a host of us from Goddard who've been working on the UNIS sounding rocket. And then we have a number of co-observers who have some excellent observations of the low atmosphere to accompany that. UNIS was launched on the 23rd of April at 1730 UT from White Sands. It's a two-channel imaging spectrograph targeting the extreme ultraviolet region of the spectrum, which has a number of coronal lines in addition to, it's particularly the new channel, which covers slightly longer wavelengths. Then one of the old channels contains a number of lines that you'll find in the lower atmosphere, as well as the higher temperature stuff. The UNIS has flown twice before. I guess I don't have a lot of background on this, but previously this channel was flown along with a shorter wavelength channel. We have a varied line space grading, really performed very well for us, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding from what I've looked through is these are the highest resolution imaging spectroscopic observations of this spectral region of the sun so far. We have a resolving power of about 3,000. Might not sound like a lot, but actually the instrument was designed not just for spectral resolution, but also to make sure we get enough light through, because you need photons to do anything. And this is a spectrum running from 52 to 63 nanometers. It was the first flight demonstration of cooled CMOS active pixel sensors. In addition to that, we have an absolute radiometric calibration for the instrument, which helps to calibrate, assist in the calibration of a number of orbital instruments as well. So I'm going to start with the movie that I made of some pretty raw data from the flight. This is the shorter wavelength channel going from helium 304 and longwards, and then the longer wavelength channel, you'll see the bright line of helium 584 in the middle. There are two side lobes to the slit to assist in co-alignment. You can see that you get in images, or you can call it an overlapogram on either side, and then of course the science data is all in the middle here. And our observing sequence, if I can get this to play, consisted of a raster in the northwest, very interested in this active region. If you look closely, this is actually a movie of the SDO data. I just picked three wavelengths and plopped them down there, and there's a bit of activity going on up here. We then went down to the southwest to catch both these active regions. And since the detectors were cooled, we figured we would look off limb and look for the emission higher in the corona as well. And just because it's fun, maybe I'll play that again. It was a huge relief to see these lobes right at the end of flight, see that we're actually seeing the edge of the sun there. This resolution doesn't really do justice to either data set, but we're able to show them both. And here you see the active regions. You can pretty clearly pick out the difference between chromospheric and coronal lines. For example, and up here you can see the silicon 11 separated from the helium 304. So we use the lows for co-alignment, and then we strip them off, and this is what the spectra look like, still pretty raw data. Here we see that active region in the northwest. This is the longer wavelength channel. This is the shorter wavelength channel. A lot of lines in there that we can do a lot of good diagnostics with. Here's a sample of a quiet sun spectrum, and this is taken from the southwest raster, and you can see the spectrum down there. So why did I call the talk a sounding rocket campaign? I mean, we only had one flight, right? So to have a campaign, you need something else. Okay, well, maybe it's because we observed three active regions. No, it's because we co-observed with other instruments, and so we thought of that as a campaign. We co-observed with SDO. Worked really hard to make sure AIA was taking an image every 12 seconds in all its bands, and that EVE was taking a spectrum every second or more. And of course, RESI too, right? Fortunately, RESI did catch this region while we were observing it. There were a number of B-class flares, or blips, you could say, in the GOES data during that time period. And so we were lucky to have caught that during the flight. But maybe more importantly, trickier to arrange, we co-observed with ICE. We see the region that they got in their raster, and with the CDS on SOHO. And then at the Dunn Solar Telescope, the IBIS instrument, observed the entire region that we were looking at. So that data, I'm afraid that I really don't have excellent data from that data set to show you yet, but here's the mosaic that they took prior to the flight, and then during our actual flight, we were targeting that region specifically, and they have wonderful line profiles of all these lines for all these regions, and then focusing on this actually during the time of the flight. Unfortunately, the seeing went bad for them right at the end of the flight, but that was when we had moved down to the southwest anyway. I guess this is more of an advertisement for more exciting things to come soon when we've had a chance to go through all these data sets. Here is a close-up of, here's the ICE data in the iron 14 line here. These lines represent the extent of the UNIS raster. In the previous flights of UNIS, we actually directly were able to calibrate ICE because we overlap their wavelength range. But there's enough density and temperature insensitive line ratios to be able to assist in their calibration with this data. And furthermore, UNIS covers such a wide temperature range on its own that we can construct a DEM. For those purposes. CDS, we have direct overlap with. The AIA 304 and 335 channels, we have direct overlap with, so we can resolve all the lines within their band passes, or most of them within 304. We miss some of the ones that are shortward of that. What allows the calibration of the orbital instruments is the fact that we calibrate UNIS in the lab. Previously, it was actually calibrated at Rutherford Appleton Laboratory. We're now doing that at Goddard. We can't actually do a full end-to-end, but I can calibrate the entire spectrograph on its own and then combine that with reflectivity measurements of the OAP to provide absolute radiometric calibrations. This is per incident photon in the front of the instrument, which is an 11-centimeter aperture. Here's some information about the two channels. Absolute calibration is at these strong lines that I can get in the lab, and then I'm able to get the spectral responsivity by using enough branching ratios in laboratory as well as flight spectra. So I was saying UNIS covers a very wide temperature range. Here's just a host of lines from the new channel and the old helium 304 channel, I'll call it. We cover everything from neutral species all the way up to the 20s of ionized iron. And there are a lot of interesting, there's a lot of useful temperature and density sensitive ratios in that data set. This is just raw integrations. This isn't even results from line profile fitting or anything. This is just taking chunks out of the data to show you one of the scans of the raster in the Northwest. So we get all the different mines in the AIA 335 bandpass there. Here's the helium 584. Iron 19, this is a flaring footpoint region, and it really sticks out pretty brightly there. So that's pretty neat. Not only that, but we catch a lot of hot emission in more extended areas of the active region right there. And notice the iron 12 line looks a little bit different, and that's only 0.4 angstroms away. 3 minutes?
Two minutes.
Okay. Here's the AIA 94 image during the time of the flight. There's the hot spot. You can see here, AIA sees the hot stuff. They also see a lot of cool stuff. Eunice really separates it. Here's some example of the hot spot, a little bit closer in. The raster was in this direction. I bend up 3 spatial pixels just to make these roughly square 3x3 arc second regions, and you see the iron 19 emission there. There's iron 20 emission popping up pretty clearly. So there's the a hot region. The neon 5 up here, there's a lot of cooler stuff right next to it. Maybe there's some chromospheric evaporation going on. Interestingly, the aluminum 11 is not really up that far. So those sort of mid-coronal temperatures. Here's just a quick example of a density-sensitive diagnostic. Take the ratio of this oxygen line, and eventually we'll actually be able to make use of these ones as well. And we can get densities, the transition region temperatures throughout that range. And so here's a summary of what we've seen. I think I've already said most of this already. We see this emission in the flaring and perhaps non-flaring parts of the active region. And I've looked for it elsewhere. I'm not quite sure if I see it there yet. But the thing you really want to do if you want to look for, say, nanoflare heating or something like that, is you really want to target the 9 to 14 nanometer region where all the strongest emission lines of iron, of highly ionized iron, are. That's never before been observed by an imaging spectrograph on the sun. It would be a great thing to do for a number of reasons, and if you want to hear more about that or more about the data, please do stop by my poster. I will apologize, I did not get it up yet today because I just got here owing to flight delays, but that will be up very soon, and I invite you all to come by and look at this in more detail if you would like to.
Thank you. Time for a question? Oh. You've asked a bunch already. Anybody else?
Thanks. That one. So say, for example, second row, second profile from the right. You see the little bump there out in the blue? Right, exactly. So nanoflares would probably predict that that would be there. Do you know if that is iron 19 or might that be a blend?
Oh, this?
Yeah, okay.
It's helium 591, which people don't usually talk about because it's so weak.
Okay, thanks. That's a shame.
It is. But this blip on the right, I'm seeing in helium 537 as well. So profiles are also more exciting stuff that will be coming, as I've had a chance to look through the data more. And I guess I forgot to emphasize. Yes, As soon as I have it, I've shown a lot of results here. It's not quite yet at the level one level for release, but as soon as I have it at that level, I will be putting it out there for all of you to look at if you'd like to play with the data.